Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 72 of the Assorted Calibers podcast. The Second Amendment podcast has a little bit for everyone. I'm Weirdbeard, and with me as always is my lovely, famous, incredible, and tired hostess, Aaron. How are you doing, Aaron?
Well, like anyone who has ever gone on a vacation knows, you need a vacation to recover from your vacation. And I was gone for about 5 days to GRPC, including the travel there and back. And it's basically taken me the entire week to get caught up and unpacked and, you know, the clothes washed and everything put away. And it's such a pain in the rear. And I've got to do it again next month. Yay! Although, fortunately, next month I only have to go down to Orlando, so it's not like a huge, huge thing. But I'm hosting a booth for Orlando Pride, and then I'm doing an interview with someone who runs the museum there in Orlando. And apparently, because I'm affiliated with the Pulse Massacre, so they want to talk to me and add me to their oral history project, which is cool. And then I've asked to speak before the Orlando Libertarian Party something or other. So, all right, hey, they want me to come speak, I'll come speak to them. I don't know really why they want me, but I will be happy to talk to anyone who wants to hear me talk. How about you, Weird?
Well, I want to transition right into the fact that, okay, I get it. I'm not going to talk too much about GRPC and MCON because we had a podcast there, and the podcast before we talked about how we were going out there and all our excitement and all that. And so now we're back and we don't need to go over it again. But I will have to say that what happened after episode 71 was Aaron gave her speech at GRPC. And I will say, for me personally, it was the best speech of the entire convention.
Well, I mean,
just
you.
Your speech on unity and getting together with people is exactly what we need, is that we need to get together and let people know, because there are splinters and fractions within the Second Amendment community of people who all are in that on the, yes, I have the right to keep and bear arms. Yes, I respect the Second Amendment. Yes, I have guns. You know, no, I don't want to give them up. But at the same time, there are people that see the NRA as a horrible, corrupt organization, and it's horrible and bad, and they stay away from that. There are people that see Second Amendment groups as right-wing groups that are not going to appreciate them for whatever reason, and so they stay away. They feel that they are only safe amongst people of their race, creed, religion, etc., so they only shoot within those groups, or etc., and we need to cut that crap out. We need to have big tent. We need to welcome those people, and we need to kick those people that are not welcoming them square in the balls and say, stop it. Do you want them to come for your guns, or do you want these people shoulder to shoulder with you in the trenches driving them back? And I loved it, Aaron. It was wonderful. It was great. It was concise. It was welcoming. It was warm. It was not over the top. It was just perfect. And so I understand that we are close friends. I understand that we do a podcast together. And so, yes, it sounds like super nepotism on me going, oh my God, Aaron's speech was incredible. It was none of those things. It was, oh my God, Aaron's speech was incredible.
And it has nothing to do with the $50 I just sent you by PayPal.
Yeah, because I haven't seen that yet and I'm not expecting that.
Well, you know, it's just the joke. You're saying something really nice, and it's like, oh, yeah, here you go. I'll just pay you for that.
Ka-ching. Ka-ching. Brought to you by Carl's Jr. I get money every time I say it.
So I have uploaded a video of my speech all across social media and on my blog. So by the time you hear this, you've probably seen it. And if not, you know where to go find it.
It'll be in the show notes. We'll just put it there. Come on.
I think it was in the show notes for the last episode.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I put it there.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put it again. Why not?
Sure.
It's copy and paste. How hard is that?
All right. So, yeah, I mean, you know, our notes here say GRPC and AmCon after report. Have we sufficiently after reported?
I think so. I think so. There's the, I mean, I missed the bar crawl because I had to go back to my to my family and help relieve my poor wife who is just working herself to death.
Yeah, weird. You missed a really cool bar because you have a daughter that you had to go back and take care of. You suck. How could you?
I just think about this bar. Like, you've shown me pictures and all that. And I'm just like, oh my God. I want to go to that bar.
Yeah, for our patrons who don't know what we're talking about, in an upcoming mag dump, like the next one, whenever mm-hmm. that releases.
This Wednesday.
Yeah, this Wednesday. Great.
So it's already out there.
Well, yes, by the time this releases, correct. Yes, it will already be out. Yes, I know how this works. We are broadcasting into the future. But, yeah, I've got this long recommendation of this wonderful bar in Phoenix called Undertow. And I sent you links to, like, the virtual tour, and I spoke to its virtues, and I sent you a link to the PDF of its menu. Did you check out those drinks?
Oh, God, yes. I mean, I won't lie. I am really not a huge fan of the tiki cocktails. They're one of those things that, like, I get a craving for them like a couple of times a year, and that's the extent of it. I mean, I'm currently drinking a martini variant, the one that's actually in the handgun radio contest of please name this drink because it's really good. It needs a name. This is like the most like savory. Linie Akavit, dry sherry. I'm using Amontillado and blue cheese stuffed olives, which I'm using Pearl's branded. Oh my God, Pearl's brand blue cheese stuffed olives are pretty awesome. And so, yeah, it's just all savory. It is a big juicy steak dinner in a glass. And so, but these cocktails, they seem good. And I mean, this is a bar like this. Yeah, they don't make bad drinks. You can't put all this sizzle and not have there be steak.
So, you know what else comes from tropical places other than tiki bars?
What is that?
Oh, that would be tropical diseases. And they keep coming back in much the same way that Beto O'Rourke keeps coming back. And so that means we've got another audio fisk about Beto. He's like a fungus. Weird. Tell us what we can expect in this upcoming fisk.
Yeah, this is unfortunately I did something that I tried to avoid, but I couldn't help it. He was such a hot topic and he got mentioned so much at GRPC. So I had to grab this interview and cut it for the show. And so, yeah, I split it up between episode 70 and now episode 72. I got this Robert Francis O'Rourke. I'm not going to call him by his fake name. And he did an interview for CNN, and this is absolutely his dive into, yes, I am coming for your guns interview. So here it is. You've been waiting for it. So last week I was fisking an interview of Robert Francis O'Rourke, also known as Beto. He comes to this CNN interview to talk about his new campaign strategy. Cuss like a pirate, and then maybe more than 3% of the likely Democrat primary voters might like him. And to talk about gun control. Last week, I ended on him talking about his trip to an Arkansas gun show where he met a likely voter who seemed to be very believable. Hola, Senor O'Rourke. I, like you, admire common sense gun control that will allow us to combat this epidemic of gun violence. Let me tell you about all the federal felonies I commit that the press and anti-gun lobby stings are never able to witness. Yeah, I totally believe him.
The challenge is so grave. The threat is so great. We can't meet it with half measure or only half the country. We've got to bring in Republicans, gun owners, Democrats, non-gun owners alike into these solutions and save lives, or else be complicit in the continuing carnage that we see throughout America.
Except the closest thing we've seen to Mr. O'Rourke's crossing the aisle is talking to some alleged people at a gun show. And amazingly, all of them support gun control. This is some very dangerous rhetoric, as it implies that the poll numbers gun banners are always pushing, showing 80 to 90% of Americans want all sorts of gun control, is true. If Americans all agreed on that, it would be law. If they say the NRA is the one that's changing the outcome, they need to look at the news. Unfortunately, the NRA is simply trying to hold itself together and keep what's left of the board of directors out of prison. They aren't defending the Second Amendment now. And I'm sad to say, they probably never will again. No, gun control isn't wildly popular. And either the gun banners are concealing that, or they simply don't know. Probably both.
So one of the parts of your solution includes mandatory buybacks for so-called assault weapons.
Okay, for as long as I was aware of the Second Amendment as a political issue, I've been hearing the pro-2A side saying, "They're coming for our guns!" And the gun control side always responds with, "Nobody wants to take your guns." Well, I guess we know who is lying.
The legislation would absolutely be doomed if it included a mandatory buyback provision. Anything smacking of confiscation would breathe life and energy into the not from my cold dead hands crowd, endangering law enforcement and likely putting a full stop to any further gun safety measures. What's your response?
It doesn't smack of confiscation. If someone stole your TV but left a 20 on your nightstand, would that still not be theft? This is confiscation. And this has been the plan of the anti-gun politicians for decades. Just until now, nobody was foolish enough to tell the truth. And note that Robert Francis O'Rourke is not the one idiot giving away the game plan. Several of the contenders for the Democrat nomination have stepped up and said that they indeed are going to take your guns away. Honestly, the others are just lying when they say they don't. What does the fake Mexican say about this?
More than I worry about the politics or the polling, more than I care about what the NRA has to say on this, I care for my kids.
I care about my kids and family too. Except unlike Robert Francis O'Rourke, I'm not a silver spoon millionaire with a U.S. Secret Service protection detail. And as I said last week, the gun control issue is not choosing between guns and safety. In fact, gun control always leads to higher violent crime numbers. So either he's thinking of his kids and doing the opposite, or he's lying. I'm going with lying.
And we should be honest with ourselves. Universal background checks will help. Ending the sales of weapons of war will help.
How will it help? The last assault weapons ban didn't work. And trust me, if they start coming door to door, it's not going to make things safer. Also, background checks do nothing. Spree killers almost always pass their background checks, and street criminals acquire their guns generally on the streets. Check the show notes. I found a more recent study that shows an even better resolution where criminals get their guns.
But if millions of them remain on the streets, they will still be instruments of terror that terrify and terrorize us and take our lives.
But what about?
I'm not going to accept that.
Because he's going to take them. Wouldn't it be great if he had the stones to try and take them personally? What the hell is he thinking? He's admitting that there are millions of guns out there, and even the cheapest ARs I've seen go for around $300, and I've seen lots over $3,000. How is he going to buy them back? Assuming anybody gives them up. They really didn't give up the bump stocks. And the same thing's happening in New Zealand. And you claim they terrorize us. Are you claiming that's why all these people bought them? And it's not like those ARs and AKs were bought exclusively by ultra-right-wing pro-Trump Christian conservatives. And I know for a damn fact that not one of those guns were bought so they could be turned in for a fraction of the cost.
This triangulation, calculation, poll testing, every move, that's what got us here in the first place.
You're damn right. Have you noticed that the gun grabbers always want just a little bit more? They never give anything back. It isn't just here. They're pushing for more gun laws in New Zealand. They're pushing for more laws in Australia. They're arresting people for carrying a screwdriver in England. And it was all for less safety. We need to stand up for our rights and only compromise when it benefits public safety.
I listened to those students from Parkland, Florida, March for Our Lives. It came out with a bold plan for peace.
More like a fresh face for Michael Bloomberg, who owns March for Our Lives. Those aren't children speaking. It's an old billionaire who also wants to take your guns, dictating to a bunch of children.
That talks about many of the measures I just described, a national gun registry, licensing for every American who owns a firearm. Use that gun for self-protection, to hunt, to collect, to shoot at target practice. But you don't need an AR-15, an AK-47. That is a weapon of war designed to kill people as efficiently, as effectively, in as great a number as possible.
So he needs the registry because he wants to ban them and collect them. But he also wants to register you. Think about that. Of course, he says the AR-15 is a weapon of war, but police officers carry them. Not for mass murder, but for personal protection. Same as you or me. But Beto wants you to be registered, and he wants you disarmed. Why might he want that?
That high-impact, high-velocity round, it distributes its entire kinetic energy in your body and destroys your insides. We talked to the surgeons who treated the victims in El Paso. Many of them had been on the battlefields in Iraq and Afghanistan. They said these are wounds of war.
So they are wounds of war, because the military uses similar ammo. That can be said about a lot of injuries. Hell, everything from sunburns to broken legs are wounds of war. But he talks about a high-velocity round that dumps its energy in the body. That's all rifle ammo. So while he says you can hunt and target shoot, really, you can't. Because if the .223 Remington is too powerful, then your hunting and target gun is likely more powerful. He's not coming for just your AR-15. He's coming for them all.
Let's not sell those anymore, and let's bring them back off of our street.
Good luck with that, Beto. Now he finishes off the interview talking about other issues. This is a Second Amendment podcast, so I'm going to leave that all alone. Except to draw a few ironic parallels.
There's no reason that you should go into bankruptcy or not be able to make that payment on a prescription medication that will save your life.
But he's proposing a confiscation that will bankrupt the country, taking guns away that save lives.
Universal, guaranteed, high-quality care, primary care, mental health care, and every woman making her own decision about her own body.
Unless that woman decides she wants to defend herself with proper tools. Yeah, screw those women. He's really a terrible person, and I hope he keeps talking. Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them.
Yeah, some of us have been waiting for it. Some of us have been dreading it.
But I gotta reiterate on the, oh my God, he makes this whole big thing about going to a gun show, and then the only people he talks to are people who just want to ban all the guns. All right, first up, I'm calling Bravo Sierra on that. And then
I'll take things that never happened for $500, Alex.
Yeah, exactly. And then number two, like, the whole reason why I do these audio fisks is that I'm bringing in the people who not only disagree with me, but vehemently disagree with me and want me dead, so that we can talk about their arguments and talk about it, so that you, the listener, if you ever encounter someone like this who is not a dyed-in-the-wool true believer, you might have a few retorts, possibly just parroting mine or possibly formulating your own, you know, with a little help of mine, because you've heard all this stuff before. And that is the whole point of this. And Beto's just saying, no, I'm just going to come for your guns. Screw you guys. But I'm going to show up at a gun show. I'm not going to pay attention to anybody. And then I'm going to come for your guns. Oh, man. And by the way, I know I mentioned it at in the last episode. But yeah, after he came out with the debate with the hell yeah, we're going to take your AR-15 and then announced that he was put it into a T-shirt, I absolutely felt the need to give him a campaign donation. And so I have my shirt. I'm actually waiting for my USCCA Hawaiian shirt, and I'm going to put on my 1911 in my Galco shoulder holster, cover it with my USCCA shirt, and throw the Beto O'Rourke shirt on. Like, I still haven't even put it on because I'm terrified to wear it in public that someone's going to get the wrong idea. I would absolutely like wear it to a gun show or something like that, because everyone would totally get it. But I don't want the normies to see it and figure it out, though they probably don't even know what it's about, because also by donating to get the shirt, you get into his email blast, and he's been sending me fundraising emails like all week, and they keep getting more desperate. So yeah, I don't know how much longer old Robert Francis is going to be around.
So let's go from people who are tropical diseases to lube and size. That's right. David is here to tell all you gun lovers and strangers about how to properly lube and size what you shoot.
Ahoy, mateys, and welcome ye to a new episode of Pirates and Other Scallywags of the Sea. I be recording this on September 19th, and if you don't know, that be International Talk Like a Pirate Day. Okay, I don't think I could keep that up through the whole segment. Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. If you've been following along in my bullet casting series, you should have a nice pile of cast bullets. However, they're not ready to load and shoot just yet. Before we can get to loading them, we need to go through three steps. First, we need to make sure that our bullets pass a basic quality check. This means looking for fill-out issues. For example, can we see any voids on the bullet? Are the edges of the bullet bases and grease grooves nice and crisp? Are the bullet bases themselves clean and square? Some of the bullets from any casting session are likely to be wrinkled. This is caused by a mold that isn't up to casting temperature. The hot metal from the casting pot hitting the relatively cold metal of the mold blocks causes the melt to set up too quickly. As the session continues, the mold heats up and this wrinkling should go away. Another thing to look out for is frosting. Not the tasty kind that you get from baked goods, but if the surface of the bullet is gray and appears rough in texture, this means the mold temperature was too high. This frosting is the antimony migrating to the surface of the bullet. Another symptom of frosted bullets is that they tend to shrink more when they cool and wind up undersized. If you notice this during your casting session, slow down. Once they develop more experience, some casters will alternate between two bullet molds to help maintain the proper mold temperature. Any bullets that don't meet the quality requirements can be tossed back in the pot for your next casting session. I've asked that a couple of image links be added to the show notes. Bullet quality 01 shows, from left to right, a frosted bullet, a couple of bullets with poor fill-out, and a couple of good bullets. Bullet quality 02 is of some badly wrinkled bullets. Next, the freshly cast bullets need to be lubricated. This lubrication does two things. It eases the passage of the bullet down the barrel, and, more importantly, it can act as a gas seal between the bullet and the barrel. No cast bullet will be a perfect fit in the barrel. Any imperfections, especially in the base of the bullet, will likely cause gas cutting. This is where hot combustion gases from the propellant get in between the bullet and the rifling. The result of this is increased leading of the bore, reduced accuracy, and a more laborious cleanup after shooting. There are several techniques that can be used for lubricating cast bullets. I'll discuss each in turn. I'll start with what's considered the easiest method, tumble lubing. In this process, the bullets and a liquid lube, such as Alox, are shaken, not stirred, to coat the bullets. After the lube dries, it forms a hard wax-like coating on the bullet. However, there are some limitations with this method. The lube covers the entire bullet, even the bullet nose, where it does no good. Also, this method works best on bullets with multiple small lube grooves, as opposed to the fewer and larger grooves in traditional cast bullets. I've asked that an image link showing the difference between these two types of cast bullet be added to the show notes as well. Look for an image called, appropriately enough, lube grooves. Next up is pan lubing. This method isn't particularly difficult, but it is slower and does require more effort. This technique calls for standing your cast bullets up in a pan with raised sides and pouring melted bullet lube in until it's up to the top of the lube grooves. You then wait for the lube to cool and solidify and then cut or push out each bullet in turn. I've asked that a link to a PDF describing this method in more detail be added to the show notes. Another system is powder coating. This process is involved enough that it deserves a segment all of its own. The last method combines bullet lubing with the third step, bullet sizing. As they come out of the bullet mold, cast bullets are often a few thousandths of an inch oversize. They may also not be quite perfectly round. Both these issues can be resolved by running the cast bullets through a bullet sizer. At heart, any bullet sizer is a very precisely sized and very carefully polished ring of hardened steel.
The cast bullets are pushed through this ring and are swaged down to their final size. For this part, I'm going to mention some brand names. There are other manufacturers than the ones I talk about here, but these are the most common or the best examples of a particular process. To start with, Lee Precision makes a push-through sizer that can be used on any single-stage press. This is an inexpensive, simple, and effective method for sizing bullets. Lubrication is done as a separate step prior to running the bullets through the sizer. Among the benefits of this sizing system, two stand out. The bullets are pushed through the sizer nose first. This means that you don't have to buy a selection of punches for your different bullet nose styles. Also, this system pushes the bullets completely through the sizer, which can increase production speed. Some bullet casters have even mounted a dedicated single-stage press upside down and attached this sizer to speed things up even more. Now for the combined lubing and sizing systems. Lyman, and before them Ideal, made a dedicated benchtop lubricizer. The Model 4500 lube sizer is a direct descendant of Ideal's original number one sizer, which dates back over 100 years. They even take the same sizing dies and top punches. These systems take solid cylinders of lubricant that you can either buy or make yourself. Oh, if you live in a colder climate, you may want to add a lubricator heater to your setup. This is simply a small, hot plate-like device that attaches under the lube reservoir. This type of sizer pushes the bullets in base first. Because of this, it requires a top punch of the proper shape so it doesn't damage the bullet nose. Once the bullet is pressed all the way into the sizing die, bullet lube is applied, and the bullet is raised up for removal. The next bullet is placed on the platform, and the process is repeated. Last, but certainly not least, is the Star Lube Sizer by Magma Engineering. This is an almost production-level system. It combines many of the best features of the sizers I've already mentioned. As with the Lee, the Star also pushes the bullets nose first all the way through the sizing die. When the bullets are pushed through the Star, they drop out the bottom with no additional setup needed. Like the Lyman, the Star takes cylinders of lube and applies it to the bullets as they're sized. There's also a lube heater like on the Lyman lubricizer. Obviously, all of these features come with a price, but if you're going for quantity, it may be a good investment for you. In regards to bullet lube in either solid or liquid form, there are many options available for purchase, but you can also make them yourself. Several recipes are included in Glenn Frexel's book. His personal favorite is commonly called Lithibe from the ingredients, a particular lithium-based high-temperature grease and beeswax. I've also asked Aaron and Weird to include a link to a webpage that discusses bullet lube ingredients and descriptions, as well as providing numerous lube recipes. I hope these segments have given you food for thought regarding bullet casting and plenty of resources in case you decide to pursue this hobby. Remember, take your time, pay attention, treat the process with all due respect, and you should be fine. Good luck and good casting. One additional note, I know they'll be back by the time you guys hear this, but I hope Aaron and Weird had a wonderful time at the Gun Rights Policy Conference in Arizona. That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me or suggestions for future segments or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook page, and Aaron or Weird will make sure I get them. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
Oh, man, more of David and his alchemy.
I was amused by his pirate accent, and I will admit, a little bit disappointed he didn't do it for the whole routine.
Oh, I knew that wasn't going to happen for the whole one. That's tiring.
That'd be, laddie.
I mean, I've joked with Ryan Machad when we were doing Handgun Radio for us to do an entire show in our thick Maine accents. And I'm like, neither one of us could do it. We would slip up at some point and switch back into our normal speaking voices.
Although I can do my Lucky Charm Irish accent for most of a day.
Oh.
I know because I've done it.
Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't talking, you know, constantly like on a show. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I would be working reception, I wouldn't do it when I answered the phone, obviously. I've got to have some professionalism. But when people would come in, oh, top of the morning to you, that sort of thing. And I actually got some requests of, look, it was funny when you started, but it's tiring now. Please don't do that. All right, fine.
But yes, I've got that, and I've uploaded all the pictures that David has requested, so that they will be on there. Though I won't lie, I can't necessarily I can tell some of them, but I can't tell all of them of which ones are messed up or not. So so you will see, and we can talk about it in the Facebook group.
So we're gonna wrap up this show by actually doing a bit of a callback, because this next segment is about something that happened at a previous convention. Listeners will remember, maybe, hopefully, that in the spring, Weird and I went to the NRA annual meeting, and Weird won something in a raffle. Weird, tell us about that.
I won a 9mm AR-15 lower from New Frontier Armory that's there based out of Las Vegas. And I decided that the best thing to do with that would be to give it away in a contest to our patrons of the show. And through nothing shady or illegal, despite what anybody might say, including Sean Sorrentino, the winner was Heinrich from Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns. And now, it took him a while, but he is finally done with the build. And he's going to describe that lucky little hunk of freedom that he has built. All right, so joining us once again, we have the man who has many names, but we know him as Heinrich from Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns. And for those with a good memory, back when the NRA show was in Dallas, I was at the Gun Collective panel there, and I won myself a 9mm AR lower. And I live in Massachusetts. And so I was unable to acquire this AR lower, and we could decide whether or not I would have, if I would have gone the same route anyway. But I decided that, you know what, since we had this ACP Patreon group, let's make it a benefit of the Patreons. Let's have a sweepstakes for giving away this 9mm lower. It was from New Frontier Armory in Las Vegas. And so it just so happened, again, totally on the level. Like, I was shaking my head. I'm like, are you serious? It happened to go to my good friend Heinrich. So joining me today is Heinrich. How you doing?
Oh, doing great, Weird. Thanks for having me on.
And it's been a long while, but the gun is finally done.
Yes. So it took a while to gather up all the parts. It took a little while to get it running reliably, but now I have all the bugs worked out, and she's fun.
And you say she because she has a name. Let's start with that.
Oh, yeah. Well, because the reason that I have this rifle in my, or this pistol in my hands, is Massachusetts, very
draconian?
Yeah.
Authoritarian?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, whatever adjective we want to apply to her attorney general, I decided that this pistol had to be named Mara.
I so appreciate it. When I'm listening to Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns and you mentioned it, I'm always like chuckling. I'm like, oh yeah, yes she is.
Yep. So, yeah, I named the pistol Mara, and I set out to do everything that I possibly could to be non-mass compliant if I could do it.
Yeah, you even sent me a few emails just on the, all right, which way should I go?
Yeah, I did ask for some advice about what would be more illegal in Massachusetts. It's like, is a folding stock or a telescoping stock, and as a pistol or an SBR? And so
let's go down those lists of can't have it in Massachusetts. Well, step one, it is an AR lower. Like the guys at New Frontier were like, really? When I told them, I said, yeah, I'm a Mass resident. And they're like, yeah, but you can take a stripped AR lower. I'm like, no, I don't think I can. And they said, well, and again, I'm going to give them a huge plug, is they're like, well, all right, if you end up not being able to take a hold of this, give us a call and we'll give you store credit and you can order some other stuff that's not guns through us. And in the end, I thought about it and said, hey, would it be fine if instead I gave the gun away to somebody? They said, yeah, so long as we're doing it through an FFL, we don't care. So that was the mm-hmm. choice we made. So step one, AR lower.
Yeah.
Step two, you went with the pistol.
Yep. Configuration. Because that whole mass pistol registry, consumer protection, whatever that they do. So
also we have the assault weapons ban, which bans any sort of AR type pistol.
Oh, that's
The pistols by weight and the magazine outside the trigger guard or outside the grip.
Yep. Yeah, so I got to rack up a whole bunch of bad points there. Let's see. I put a law folder on it, so it's got a folding stock, and then or folding brace because it has an SBA3 length adjustable brace. So I got a twofer on stuff that Mass doesn't like.
Yeah, folding stock and adjustable stock.
Yep.
Even though it's a brace, but
yeah. It's not actually a stock because it's got a strap and it comes apart and you can wrap it around your forearm if you like.
I mean, let's be honest. This is angels dancing on the head of a pin. Once it breaks one of the rules, they don't care.
Yeah. But, yeah.
And I believe you've got a threaded barrel.
Oh, yeah.
Verboten.
I got it. Yep. I have a 10-inch Faxon threaded barrel that I put a... It's not... a muzzle. Well, it is actually a flash hider on it. So,
that's also verboten.
Yep, it's not a compensator or a muzzle brake. It's a flash hider. So, yep, got, and it's not pinned and welded. So,
yep,
there's a couple more.
And then, do you have a bayonet lug on it?
This one doesn't have a bayonet lug on it, but I used a Manticore Arms transformer rail.
Mm-hmm.
So I can take the side panels off of the handguard and put on Picatinny rail and then stick a Picatinny bayonet on it if I would like to.
Nice. Yeah.
So
definitely do that at some point. Actually you definitely need to send me a picture of her for the show.
Oh, I definitely will.
Yeah. So we'll have a picture in the show notes of Mara. And if you could stick a bayonet on her, that would make me laugh. But it's not entirely necessary, but that was always something. I was at a full auto shoot once and somebody had an Uzi with a bayonet on it. And I gotta say, it's the practicality, not so much, but pretty badass.
Yeah, it's one of those, it's ridiculous and fun, so why not?
So are we missing any other evil features? I mean, obviously, you're probably, it takes MP5 mags, and obviously you're not using 10 rounders.
Yep, takes MP5 mags, and I've only bought 30s. And I probably, if I get a different size, it'll be the 40s that you can get from ETS.
Nice. I didn't even know about those.
Oh, yeah. They started making those a few months ago. And like, ooh, I need to get them. Because supposedly they run hollow points better, too. But we're not in Jersey, so that's not extra points.
Nope.
Let's see. I don't think Massachusetts has anything against the bad levers, do they?
No.
Okay. So I didn't think so. The trigger and safety aren't anything that Massachusetts would get mad at, except that for a pistol, they're probably lighter than they should be because I put a nice jarred target trigger in it.
Interesting fact. The pistol weight, pistols must be sold with a 10-pound or greater trigger unless they have a manual safety.
Okay.
So car arms with that, you can get a PM 40, PM 9. They haven't had any 45s. But you can get a PM 9 and a PM 40 here in Massachusetts. And those have the little goofy, unusable, safety put into them. And that is simply as a means of like, don't ever use it. Just use it as a way to sidestep the trigger.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So this has a 3.5 pound spring in the trigger.
Nice.
But it does have the manual safety because it's an AR. So,
and I think I remember hearing you on Geek Sketches and Guns saying that if you will be getting a can for this.
Oh yeah. Either I will be getting a can on my trust, or once I have my SOT, I'll be getting or building a can through that, and I'll put a can on this and be shooting suppressed.
Awesome.
So we'll probably, I think Matt has a 9mm can on the way, so that'll probably be here before mine does, and we'll play with that.
Awesome. All right, so tell me about this build.
Okay, so...
Now, by the way, was it easy getting the receiver from New Frontier Armory?
Yeah, I had them ship it up to Jard, and it showed up right on time, transferred it through, no trouble at all.
Awesome.
Which is one of the benefits of working part-time at a gun shop, because you can have stuff transferred in. But, yeah, so I took that C5 lower. I put a New Frontier C5 upper on it, which is slick sided, because you need to have a special upper that has a little bit of extra space in the underside of it for the MP5 magazine feed lips. So that's about the only other like specialty part that I had to get for it, was the upper and lower. Then I'll just start at the back. I've got the SB-A3 adjustable length brace, law tactical folder. I have a special heavy buffer. Let's see. I don't remember exactly who that was from. It's like a 10-ounce buffer, so it kind of slows down and smooths out the 9mm blowback recoil. I have a Faxon 9mm blowback bolt, a Faxon 10.5-inch barrel, Radian Raptor ambidextrous charging handle, Magpul pistol grip. It's their more vertical, like K2 style one that is pretty nice when you have it on a short length of pull pistol. That Jard JAR trigger, a Phase 5 bad lever, the Manticore Arms 8-inch transformer rail, and the Manticore Arms flash hider that has the interchangeable tips, so you can put different flash hider tips on it and make it look like a Star Wars blaster or G.I. Joe laser gun and stuff like that, and an Enforce light, and a SIG Romeo 5.
Nice.
So,
now, is the Romeo 5, is that one of the ones that just turns on and stays on?
Yep, it's you can turn it off, but it's made to be turned on and just left on, because it has the auto sleep feature where if you pick up the gun after it's been sitting and gone to sleep, by the time you have it shouldered, it's the dot's going to be turned back on and illuminated.
Nice.
So it has something ridiculous like a 5-year battery life.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I use that on a lot of stuff because it's a $100 optic and pretty sturdy, and the battery lasts forever.
That's so cool. So you said you had some trouble getting it running.
Yeah. When I first got everything together, I would get going and everything would run right. And then I would start to get stovepipes and weird double feeds where it wouldn't eject the empty case, and it would shove that in beside the fresh cartridge that was halfway in the chamber. And eventually I tracked that down to the ejector was working loose, because there's a set screw in from the side of the lower that holds the ejector blade in. And it turned out that all I had to do was back that screw out, put a drop of Loctite on it, and run it back in tight.
I got you. And this is the ejector that came with the lower, didn't it?
Yep, that's bolted into the lower and keeps it and part of that. But once that was tight and that set screw stopped working loose, it has worked just fine. So I'm going to run a few hundred more rounds through it and see if that Loctite breaks loose, but I don't expect it to, and this might actually end up being my nightstand gun.
Oh, that's a good choice.
Because 9mm almost SBR pistol, especially once I have a can on it.
Yeah, especially with the can, yeah.
Yeah, red dot and flashlight and a can and post up at the top of the steps of this thing, and 30 rounds of go away is nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, and I mean, it throws a little bit of irony on too, that the fact that you're naming it after Mara Healy and essentially having it as an aluminum middle finger, but but at the same time you ended up making something that is astoundingly practical.
Yeah, that's kind of the awesome thing about this PCC renaissance is there's a lot of good parts available, and if you if you understand what they can do ballistically and how they shoot, they can be a really practical gun for you. Because inside the house or across the yard, this would actually be a pretty darn good defensive carbine.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's awesome. And yeah, the guns don't really move around much at all, and they're just so easy. And even again, without the can, I mean, you've got what, 10-inch barrel, you said?
Yeah, this is a 10-inch barrel. It really isn't that loud.
No, which... I mean, 10-inch barrel's going to be reasonable. Like the 16-inch barrel guns are actually quite reasonable.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be the same blast as setting off a 223.
No, nowhere near what one of my, it's like my What Would Stoner Do carbine has a big break on the end to tame down the recoil since it's really light. And I would not want to shoot that thing inside of a house.
Mm-hmm.
And 9mm from a moderate length barrel would be relatively quiet.
Yep.
And I've mostly been shooting like 155 range fodder. I haven't sent any of the 147 subsonic defensive loads through it yet, but I imagine those would be pretty quiet.
Yeah. You meant 115, right?
Or did I say 115?
155. That's a heavy nine. Oh.
Yeah, no. I'm shooting 115 range bullets.
That's 9x39.
Yeah, it's like, no, that those would be my 300 blackout stuff.
Yeah.
But no, this I've been shooting like 115s and 125s loaded up to normal plinking or normal plinking loads and supersonic and with a little bit of a crack to them. But no, it's a really fun rifle.
Well, I am so glad you're enjoying it. I'm glad that it's also, not only is it a fun gun, but it's a practical gun. And even though, again, this was all done with it was actually done with a Google. I'm trying to actually, no, this wasn't done with a Google. This is done with a randomizer on the NetHack Freenode channel. I actually used the bot on that channel to select the winner. And yeah, so it was done entirely on the level by a robot that is not in my control, but it happened to go to a good friend of mine, and I'm so glad you're enjoying it. And go on the show notes. I'll try to track down links to most of the parts, and I'll put those in the show notes as well. Or maybe you could send me an email, and that'll work out just the same.
Yeah, I'll put together some links to everything that I've got, because I still have all my invoices from Brownells and Faxon and everywhere.
Awesome. Well, that is Heinrich, and you can check him out on the Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns podcast that you can find in all the places where you can get podcasts. So thanks again to Heinrich for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Okay, so the fact that he's named it after the anti-gun attorney general in your state is delicious and hilarious.
I didn't really think too much of the, do I need a 9mm AR? It wasn't entirely on the, I can't own this, so therefore I'm just going to give it away. I might have given it away anyway. But yes, literally the people at New Frontier Armory went, it's a strip lower. You're fine. This is like 50 state legal. Nope. It is 49 state legal. You could transfer this to any state out there with the exception of Massachusetts, thanks to Mara Healy. And so he decided, hey, let's do it. Like, literally, he was sending me text messages. So what would be worse in Massachusetts, this or that? Like, he wanted to know, do I declare it as a pistol or do I declare it as a rifle? Because would it be worse if it was a rifle or worse if it was a pistol? Definitely worse if it's a pistol. Cool, it's a pistol then. Should I put a side folding brace on it? That'll make it worse. Yeah, that would make it worse. Let's make her blood boil. So yeah, that is a snazzy little gun, and I have a massive parts list. Like, literally, he has like inventory numbers and prices for all the stuff that is in this gun. So literally, you can build this exact gun if you wanted to. So I gotta appreciate that.
How much did he end up spending on his free gun?
I did not add it up, but a gabillion.
Well, it's going to be even more when he adds the can to it.
Oh yeah, definitely is going to. The can always adds more. But I mean, the nice thing about getting yourself a 9mm can is that yes, it'll work on your AR pistol, and yes, it'll work on your 9mm pistols.
All right, so we can just estimate he spent at least $1,000 on this, right?
It looks like it.
Okay.
Let's see. 100.
Gee, what a nice present you gave him. Here's an excuse to spend a lot more money. Yay!
Well, I mean, to be fair, that top line item of $169.99 was nothing but his transfer fee. And again, he transferred it to a company that he works for. So I kind of wonder if they waived it or not. So yeah.
Okay.
Oh wait, but the folding stock adapter costs twice that much. So yeah.
Oh jeez.
But let's face it, he was probably gonna build it anyway.
Yeah, probably.
And look at the joy it gives him, and look at the pictures of it. They're pretty.
You know, if we ever have a blog shoot or a blog shoot where you and he can attend, you really need to shoot that gun.
Oh, yeah.
Duh.
Oh, God. I mean, I got to say, I didn't know if I necessarily wanted a pistol caliber AR, but let me tell you, someone hands me a pistol caliber AR, I'm going to shoot it. And I mean, we were talking last week about Wally and his Colt 9mm intricately suppressed SMG. And literally, like, almost every time we've shot, I've been like, you brought that, right? Yes, I brought that.
You know, for someone who won't own an AR, you really seem to like them.
So, to be fair, honestly speaking, actually, I was recording an interview with Logan Medish of High Caliber History today. Well, that'll be coming up at some point in the future. I got a ton of interviews that are salting through thanks to GRPC and just luck of the draw. But yeah, we got talking about ARs like at the end after we were all done, and it'll go on a blooper reel as well. But yeah, it's the. If I didn't live in Massachusetts, I probably would have one. I might not have one in 223 because I'm kind of a hipster like that. I really like 300 Blackout. Like, I definitely think I would get one in 300 Blackout. But just because they're such a pain in the butt to get in Massachusetts, and now I would argue nigh impossible, because I mean, there are people that are selling ARs in as private sales in Massachusetts, but I kind of was like, that might technically be illegal.
But you could have gotten one before Mara Healy did her little Mara May I game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But on top of that, again, the only thing I could get is 94 compliant ARs.
But, okay, you are a huge fan of Magnum PI.
Mm-hmm.
Magnum was a SEAL in Vietnam. Didn't he use an M16 in Vietnam?
As far as I know, in all the flashback scenes in all of the Magnum PI episodes, he's just using a 1911 in a shoulder holster. Just saying.
Okay.
I cannot recall a single episode of Magnum PI where Magnum is back in the jungles of Vietnam with an M16. I might be wrong. I could go on IMFDB right now and look it up, but I'm pretty.
Do it. Ha! First season in the pilot episode, Don't Eat the Snow in Hawaii. Magnum, and there's a picture. Magnum and other members of his special ops unit are seen in a Vietnam War flashback armed with the M16A1 in your face.
That is true. That is absolutely true.
Now you have to get one.
Now I have to.
Yes, you have to. You aren't a proper Magnum fanboy unless you don't own one. After all, what would your father think?
That is so true. That is so true. I mean, I won't lie. Like, if ever I get a stroke of luck and Mara Healy gets frog marched off to federal prison, that's like the first thing I'm going to do is go and buy myself. I'm not going to get myself like an A1 style, you know, AR, because I don't like the triangle handguards and I don't want the carry handle. I want a nice flat top that I could like put optics and stuff on it. But I'll absolutely be getting one, probably in 300 blackout because I'm a hipster.
Okay.
It's like an AK and a 45 ACP at the same time. What?
No, it's just, it's funny that you call yourself a firearms hipster when you're using a pistol and a cartridge that's over 100 years old.
It's true. But it's a pistol
that's that's not hipster.
It is when everybody's shooting Glocks.
No. Hipster, antique hipster, would be someone who uses a Nagant revolver.
Oh, okay.
Specifically, someone who has a threaded Nagant revolver.
That's absolutely true. Oh, that's absolutely true. Yeah, I see. I see the 1911 kind of like all the hipsters playing the original Nintendo games, ironically, versus me playing an original Nintendo game because I
friggin'
love original Nintendo.
Okay, so it's like the hipsters who ride bicycles that don't have gears and call them fixies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow, that is truly repulsive.
But at the same time, I was mentioning to people, despite how I look, I am 100% not a hipster. Everything I do is because I love it entirely unironically. I love having a beard. I love 1911s. I love revolvers. I love wearing Hawaiian shirts. I love drinking Pabst Blue Ribbon. I love playing ancient Nintendo games. This is my joy. I'm in my happy place.
Okay, as long as it sparks joy.
It does spark joy.
Okay.
Is that Marie Kondo?
Yes.
Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/AssortedCalibersPodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts and share the show with your friends, both online and off.
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com, and you know how to spell it, goddammit. And you can hear me
weerdworld.com.
And hear me weekly on Headgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network. My name's Aaron. I'm an Operation Blazing Sword and Operation Pink Pistols, and I'm awesome, and I'm a big deal, and I'm more famous than Weirdbeard. Check me out at all those URLs.
Thanks to Nate Spencer for our music. Oh, you didn't think it through, did you? Now you're stuck with the outro.
My name's Aaron. I gave a great speech at Operation Blazing Sword, and Weirdbeard just sat in the back and clapped. I'm better than him, and so's our podcast. Good night.
Good night, everyone.